Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the IL Preps Podcast. I am Dan Abram, contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, joined today by managing editor Jeff Shannon. Jeff, it's that time of the year in the high school season where we start to figure out who's for real, who's not. We've had numerous close games by teams in our top 25. We have had other interesting upsets, other results. Can you please go in depth about some of the shakeup in our top 25 this week?
So the top 25 this week, our top 10 stays the same. Hill Academy, despite the weather affecting some of their schedules during their annual trip to the East Coast, made a successful run for the games they did play. They beat Loyola Blakefield, they beat Boys Latin, and then they had to turn around and head to Buffalo and took on top 25 team IMG Academy there and won those games. We get into that a little bit later, but they do hold the fort there at the top. Our top 10 doesn't change. Some big wins by programs like McDonough this week over Haverford, Malvern Prep. Culver Academy has had a nice early run. Landon has had a nice early run. So a lot of the teams that we thought were going to be good are good here in the early seasons in these strong OOC games so far. One big shakeup in the teens of our rankings, Bullis. Not really a big shakeup, but they jumped from 23 to 12 this week. A nice start from them. Their offense looks like it's clicking early. Alex Trippi is off to a hot start in games, including a nice run at Calverton this week. But the rest of that sort of stays the same. We're waiting for New York and Connecticut to get online. Our biggest move of this week's rankings was the addition of Torrey Pines. Sort of fortuitous. We talked to Torrey Pines coach John Ozizzi last week and got his take on their early season. They moved into the number one spot in our West rankings last week. They have a win over St. Ignatius Prep. Win over Lawrenceville, New Jersey. They have one of the strongest schedules in the West. When you look at Western powers, all the Colorado big powers, all the big Southern California powers, St. Ignatius Prep with that win. They're just primed for a top 25 spot right now, especially that St. Ignatius win. We're looking at that in the context of that San Francisco program beating another top 25 program, Gonzaga, this past week. So we always cut it off at 25 because I kind of think that's where the debate starts. It's fun to kind of create a line there. But when we're looking at teams that are on the bubble, 26, 27, 28 teams, St. Ignatius is probably one of those teams. Torrey, with that one, gives them a little bit of a bump over top of their Northern California rival. So that's why they make their way into the top 25 this week. So it's fun to have a California team in there, and I think they're deserving of it.
Yeah, I don't know if we had a California team in our top 25 at all last year, so already week two, we already have one.
I was going to say, St. Ignatius Prep has made its way into the top 25, and including final rankings several times. But, yeah, I don't think last year it was just too many teams taking each other out, I want to say, for anyone to really make that national run last year.
All right, let's jump straight into some of the interesting results from the past week or so. The Hill Academy scraping by with a few one-goal wins. They're kind of rocking that whole Syracuse swagger right now. Keep escaping with one-goal wins, but they had a 6-5 victory over a Baltimore area program, Boys Latin, and then they finished that up with an 11-10 victory over IMG Academy in Buffalo. Jeff, you went to the Boys Latin game. Can you go in depth about what happened in that game?
Yeah, it was a tight affair through the contest. Both defenses were playing really well, including I thought Boys Latin's defense was spectacular for this early in the season to be playing that well. And it really came down to possessions and timely offense. Ignacio for Hill Academy is a great face-off guy, but I thought, especially in the Baltimore games, teams did a good job with wing play. The Boys Latin, who's their wing guy? Ubiraco was the name that was escaping
Johns
me.
Hopkins commit.
Johns Hopkins commit. He was strong on the wing, and their faceoff guy was strong as well.
Jake Glatz.
Glatz, who's done really well. The guys that impressed me most from Boys Latin, though, were on their offense. Chris Brandow. Oh, sorry. Matt Brandau attack and Luke Schilling. Chris Brandau was their goalie. I thought he looked fantastic, too, and that's sort of a hole that Boyce Ladin had coming into this season at the loss to Pizzula to North Carolina that I'm sure they're eager to see if Chris could fill in. I thought he played extraordinarily good on Sunday. But on the offense, Matt Brandau and Luke Schilling were good as well. I think the offense for Boyce Ladin is going to run through Matt, a Yale commit, and then Luke is a great sort of off-ball mover, a target that the offense can find, and he can score goals for them. For the Hill Academy, they have a transfer in, a guy named Keegan Kahn, who I believe played at Del Barton last year. He's a Villanova commit, the last time I saw, and he was sort of the quarterback of the offense, filling that role that Jeff Teat would have played last year. He had 3 goals in that contest, really working from X. And then Riley Curtis is sort of the offensive star for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Brody was saying after the game that he was a little bit injured going into this week. They weren't sure what his status would be, but he didn't do a tremendous amount offensively in the game, obviously with 6-5 score, but he was timely in his scores and was the difference in the tight contest. I thought both teams looked well. I think Boyce Ladin, they played a little bit above my expectations.
Okay.
And then the Hill Academy, I thought they're gonna play like this season, these one goal games. I think we saw a little bit of that on Tuesday against IMG Academy. Curtis again being the veteran, scored the game winner in that contest. So,
well, you also got to keep in mind when Hill Academy goes on these trips, they're playing one team day after day, so they really don't have any time to game plan or, you know, practice in depth against a certain opponent. So it's really just coming down to them executing, you know, and just being a better team sometimes. Another result interesting from last night, actually, Tuesday night, was Malvern Prep over Calvert Hall. Calvert Hall was high on our list of MIAA squads who could be contending for a title, but the Malvern Prep took them to school, 13-7 victory for them. Mike Fay, a Notre Dame commit, had 4 goals, and then Jack Trainer, a Penn State commit, had 3 goals and 2 assists in a 4-point fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was we were joking, the guys. There's a regular crew of people I tend to watch these games with when I go out to scout them, and we were joking that for both teams, if there was, I don't think there was a guy above 5'10 in their squad. You know, in lacrosse, that's fine. Short, fast, quick, speed, leverage, all those things are important in this sport, and players can shine like that. But it was two teams with small, quick, fast guys attacking the cage and working both offenses. I just thought, watching the game, Malvern has a better core of guys. We mentioned Fay, I thought, had a great game. Trainer, and Billy Coyle, another guy who can shoot for them. They really worked well together offensively, worked off ball well, connected on a lot of assisted shots, and just were able to pound Calvert Hall's defense. I think Hall looked okay. They're going to maybe need to spend this off, you know, the early season working out who they are, who are their offensive contributors, who are the guys getting the ground balls, those type of things. So they have talent, and if you look at their Division I commitments, it's definitely there. Kelly, in particular, I thought is a good offensive piece for them. But they didn't seem as in sync as Malvern Prep. Malvern Prep, especially looking at the score from the McDonough-Havard game, you got to think Malvern Prep is the class of Pennsylvania, that Eastern Pennsylvania area so far. We got to wait to see some schools like LaSalle and some of the publics kick off this week. But I really like what Malvern is bringing to the table this year, and should be a stalwart in our top 10, top 25.
Yeah, when we were, you know, prepping for the top 25, the initial top 25 rankings, a theme that seemed to emerge for me was that there's going to be some, you know, Philadelphia area, Pennsylvania schools that are going to be resurging, and it looks like with this victory, Malvern Prep has ascended to the top. LaSalle, we got to wait on them to see how they, you know, come along. But you also mentioned Haverford. Haverford, the victim of a McDonough beatdown, 17-9 victory for the Eagles. 7 players scored for them.
7 players scored multiple goals for McDonough. So that shows the depth of their offense, which is a question I had a little bit going into this year, losing some of their leaders from last season, including Jackson Morrill, who's had a nice start at Yale. They, I had a little bit of a question of what they looked like. Obviously, they had a great game against Haverford. I'm still kind of catching up on the reports of that contest, but it really is a little bit concerning for Haverford. This is a team I know John Nostrand. He's one of the best coaches in the preps game, and I think, you know, maybe these early issues will help them out later in the season when they're going for an Interac regular season championship and or for the tournament that they host up there. But it's a little concerning early. They've lost a lot of talent over the last couple of years. They really built those championship teams on some depth, some talent that you're seeing at the NCAA level, including, you know, this year, Doc Sakin and what he's doing down in Virginia. They don't really quite have that this
next
year.
Level kind of player, maybe?
Yeah, they have, I know his son, who's going to Penn State, is one of the top players. There's a Virginia commitment, Delgarno, I believe his name is, that they're kind of building their roster around, but it's not quite what it has been the last few years. And you see that come out to play in these early games.
It's very interesting to see McDonough, who also, you know, lost a lot of players. Jackson Morrill, their gamer specifically, he's doing his thing at Yale right now. So there was a lot of questions offensively for McDonough, but one thing we did look at was that they had a really athletic core, particularly on defense. So this is a very interesting result in the fact that, one, they scored a lot of goals, and two, they held Haverford, you know, which is a very high-scoring team, to just 9. So very, very nice win for the Eagles. I'm going to be honest. I didn't know if McDonough would be as good this year in the MIAA, but this is a very glaring result. I might have to rethink that.
Yeah, MIAA, some years you can kind of peg the top one or two teams. It could be competitive this year. I could see. I'm intrigued to see. We're headed out to see St. Paul's this week. They're also hosting Haverford on campus. That's a big game. Gilman has a couple games this week, including Georgetown Prep coming up, and then Avon Old Farms, one of our top 25 teams, is coming in on Saturday. I'm going to go check that out for a little bit before heading off to the NCAA game. So the depth could definitely be there. It could be a nice rebound year, I think, for the MIAA. Last year, you kind of knew who was going for the title. This year, it could be much more competitive than that.
The next result we want to analyze is Bullis 15, Calverton 3, a pretty hot start for the Bullis Bulldogs and Jeff Balistri. You said Alex Trippi had a very good game.
Yeah, I know Trippi's had a good start for them in particular, and he's someone that we're going to have, you know, our eyeballs on all season as a player who should be contributing, you know, player of the year type candidate.
Yes.
It's good to see that they're, I think the key for me in these early contests is it's good to see that their offense is clicking after losing so much talent. The last couple of years, They lost, what, Perkovic up to
Petkovic,
yeah.
Who's playing for
again,
Colgate.
I told you, if you're listening to this podcast, don't kill me on your names. But he's playing for Colgate, the young man at Maryland, Schullenberger. Yeah.
Yes.
Schullenberger at Maryland. I mean, those are big key offensive pieces for them, and that they can bounce back and continue to put up these points against a team that had beat St. Stephen St. Agnes earlier in the season. Calverton had dropped them. So, again, DC is shaking up, especially Gonzaga lost on the road. So you start looking at Landon, you start looking at Bullis as the top teams in the DC area. Some of those games will be coming up. I know Bullis, I want to say, hosts Gonzaga this Friday. So that's an interesting matchup there. But it's just kind of like how these early games shake out for the DC area. I'm intrigued.
Speaking of Gonzaga, they lost to St. Ignatius Prep out of California 11-10 this past week down in Dallas, Texas. Anthony Crimmins from StickStarReport.com was there. He'll be our podcast guest, and he will go in-depth about that game. But first, we need to give a shout-out to our sponsor, Sideline Swap.
Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more. Or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. List in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit SidelineSwap.com today to get started. That's SidelineSwap.com.
We now welcome onto the show Anthony Crimmins, writer for StickStarLacrosse.com, the most comprehensive source for lacrosse coverage in the Lone Star State.
First, maybe just talk a little bit about your history in Texas and how long you've been covering the sport and what you've seen in that time.
Yeah, so I'm from Dallas, Texas, played lacrosse at Capel High School. Then I went to Avon Old Farms and then went and played Division I lacrosse at Butler University. Came back, and while I was in college, kind of started my company, Six Star Lacrosse. So I've been integrated with Texas lacrosse since about 1997. And in that time, obviously, seen tremendous growth throughout the years. It's been really a lot of fun to watch. You know, the state has changed a lot. Previously, like when I was in high school, you had teams like St. Mary's Hall and St. John's competing for state championships. St. Mary's Hall won 3 in a row in the late 90s. And now it's kind of shifted to Dallas. Dallas has kind of taken over a little bit. They really got their youth program situated a little bit better than Houston did. And now they've kind of enjoyed this time out in front. Highland Park obviously leading the fray, but then ESD, Jesuit, St. Mark's, you know, Capel even got one in there. So it's just been a very interesting process to see how the state has changed across the board. And I've been in it now for about 20 years down here. So it's been a lot of fun.
Anthony, before we get into an in-depth look at Texas, I know there's a sort of nationwide event this weekend down your way. St. Ignatius Prep, a power from California, was there. Gonzaga was there. And I believe you were out covering it. What was your takeaways from that, from those games?
Well, we took in the SI Gonzaga game and then the SI Jesuit game. The SI Gonzaga game was, it'll be tough to beat that game in the state this year. It's, didn't have any Texas teams playing, but it was probably some of the highest level lacrosse that we'll see. It was a action-packed game. You know, the level of play was very high. People were moving around really quickly. Some dominant athletes on the field, obviously. There's a ton of committed guys on both sides. You know, initially Gonzaga kind of went out, got in front. Then SI came back, and Gonzaga established a lead through the third quarter, and then SI fought their way back into it, and then with about, I'd say, 40 seconds left, tied it, and then went up very quickly and ended up taking the victory, which anytime you can beat Gonzaga and your team west of the Mississippi, that's a pretty good one to get. So it was a very dynamic game. I really tried to encourage a lot of people to get to that game because in Texas, it's all about seeing higher level lacrosse. We don't have NCAA programs here. So that was a pretty good look at what it's supposed to be like. And then we watched Jesuit play SI. Jesuit had some troubles. SI was obviously feeling really good about themselves after beating Gonzaga, and there was no step back. They just kept the pedal down the whole time. Jesuit was missing Luke Milliken and Cage. He had the flu, and they've just recently had some injuries to their squad. But they really, SI really brought it and kind of handled up on Jesuit. While I wasn't there on the last day, Jesuit played much better against Gonzaga. I believe they lost that contest 13-9. So it was just a good weekend in Dallas to watch high-level lacrosse, and we really encourage that.
The surprise team out of Texas this year seems to be the Woodlands. They're undefeated. They got two huge wins over California teams, Foothill and La Costa Canyon. They also beat Dallas Jesuit. What have you seen? What have you heard about this team?
Well, you know, for me being here and kind of having an understanding of the state and actually getting to train a lot of guys, I'm not very surprised with this. The Woodlands has been pretty relevant the last couple of years. They've got a lot of quality players in the program. A couple years ago, they made it to the Final Four, which was a good step for them. And then the year after that, they made it to the state championship where they lost to HP. Last year, they kind of had a step back. They just ran into a tough ESD squad. But what they have is tremendous depth and athleticism and skill. In terms of how they stack up with everybody, I would say that HP is probably at the top right now, as long as they can continue to stay healthy. ESD is very talented at the high end, but they have some younger guys. But I think the Woodlands poses a lot of issues because they have the depth and they're experienced. They've got a lot of juniors, a lot of seniors on the team. Their high-level guys are about as high-level as it gets. So this has kind of been building. Their 2018 grade is very, very good. Their 2020 grade is very good. Their 2019 and 2017 classes both have very high-level players. So they're in a pretty good spot there for the next couple of years where they're going to apply pressure to the North District group.
I know there's also a Division II title as well. How's that shaping up this year, and are there any surprises there?
The Division II group has a lot of depth as well. There are a bunch of quality programs in Texas. The THSLL will move certain programs up after they've enjoyed X amount of success and the program is in a certain spot. But this year, the quality programs are Highland Park's D2 team. They're loaded. Highland Park has a D1, D2 program, as does Southlake, Woodlands, Westlake. So those programs obviously are very deep. But then out of Austin, Georgetown, they've consistently been pretty solid in Austin, but they've been able to get solid wins against the North District. Frisco is another good group. Rockwall, they are a very senior-laden class led by Brody Lowry. He's going to Bellarmine. Carson Newman, he's going to Bellarmine. Luke Fisher, he's going to Stevenson. So they're a really good group. They can play with a lot of people. They actually scheduled ESD and played them, I think it was about 10-3. So they're very solid. Colleyville, they're the state champs from last year. They lost a lot of seniors. They're good. And then Plano is also very tough. So a heavy concentration in the North District. One group out of Austin, Georgetown. In Houston, you've got Pearland and the Woodlands D2. Woodlands D2's been playing pretty well. They're kind of building out of that 2020 group that they have. Those are the teams that are probably going to be making a run for it. Any team that's outside of Dallas, whether it's D1 or D2, has a lot on their hands because they've got to go through all the Dallas squads when it comes at the end of the season. So if they're not preparing themselves for that and playing solid out-of-district schedules, it kind of gets tough. But I would say that the Dallas squads probably have a little leg up there.
And Anthony, who are some NCAA recruits coming out of the state of Texas that we should be looking at?
Well, there's a ton of committed kids down here right now. I mean, this is the most that there's ever been, and it's probably going to just continue to trend in that direction. I mean, across the board, there's a lot of guys. I can kind of break it down by school. You know, at Highland Park, you've got Parker Alexander and Jack Kosmetsky. They're both going to UNC. Paxton Alexander, Parker's younger brother, he's going to Michigan. Chris Walker, he's a senior. He's going to Georgetown. Kyle Massimilian, face-off guy, he's going to Harvard. Owen Siebold, he's going to Cuse. Gabe Galbraith, he's a sophomore. He's going to Ohio State. Cade Sosted, he's going to UVA. I mean, and that's just Highland Park. Obviously, at ESD, you've got Nakai Montgomery, who's going to Duke. He's probably the most dynamic player in the state. He's just an absolute giant out there. Kid's super strong, super fast. Will be able to contribute at Duke. He's actually going there to play football and lacrosse. Patrick Skowniak, he's going to Navy. Over at Jesuit, you've got David Sprock going to UVA. Luke Milliken and Cade, he's going to UNC. Down in the Woodlands, you've got Grant Murphy going to Cuse. They've got a really solid defensive unit with Grant Murphy going to Cuse, Jackson Shear going to Air Force, Carson Daspic going to Jacksonville, Diego Zimmerman going to Ohio State, Randy McCreary, 2018, he just switched his commitment from Loyola to Notre Dame. So they're loaded. And then obviously the other publics have really talented players as well. Casey Wasserman and George Elmquist, they're both from Southlake. Casey's going to Towson. George is going to Fairfield. Cody Foster, he's at Plano West. He's going to Jacksonville. So, the list goes on. There's a lot of guys out there who are going to the next level. The top group, they can compete, and they have, in the summer, obviously, at the highest level. So it's a lot of fun to watch, and I just think that it'll probably continue to trend that way. The athleticism has always been there, but the level of skill and understanding has definitely gotten there as well now. So kind of a perfect mixture down here. So
all those schools you mentioned, Highland Park, Dallas Jesuit, Episcopal School of Dallas, seem to be the favorites in Texas. How do you see the playoffs panning out this year?
I'd have to say that I think HP, ESD, and the Woodlands are locks. Jesuit is probably that next squad in there. But then you've got Westlake out of Austin and Plano West up here in Dallas. They're probably around five. And then after that, Lake Travis, St. Mark's, Memorial, Southlake, they could probably all give Jesuit a run for the money. Jesuit's just a little bit down this year. They had a very strong senior class last year. They sustained some injuries. Their defense isn't as tight as it's been in the last couple of years. So I think Jesuit should make it, but it's just a function of, will anybody upset them? But that's why the North District regular season is so important with how the rankings work out, whether it's the 1-2 and then the 3 and the 4. The 3 and the 4 seeds just have to play so many more games to make it into the Final Four than the 1 or 2 seeds have to play. So the 1 or 2 seeds, or the 1 seed, just really has to win one game to make it into the Final Four in the playoffs, where the other guys kind of have to work through it. So those are definitely the top teams.
Anthony, thank you for joining us. We appreciate all your insight on lacrosse in the Lone Star State. Keep up the great work at LoneStarLacrosse.com.
Absolutely. Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Let's move on to our Player of the Week. Who is our Player of the Week, Jeff?
I liked Joey Epstein from Landon. Had a 3-goal and 3-assist performance against the Traveling McCallie School. A good program out of Tennessee who helps develop a lot of talent, and they always make a trip out to this way as well. Joey has been one of our top recruits for a while now, sort of a quarterback offensive attackman for Landon, and he's sort of the piece that drives the offense for them this year and will be important going into this next season. So Joey gets our Player of the Week.
Yeah, he's a Johns Hopkins commit. He's the quarterback for a very talented and very stacked Landon squad, one of the reasons why we had them in the top five.
So, Dan, what are you looking forward to in the upcoming week in the high school prep world?
So, we just got out of our top 25 meeting, and one of our big movers was Bullis, and one of our big, they moved out of the top 25 was Gonzaga, and they play each other on Friday. I'm very interested in that matchup because I feel like Casey O'Neill, one of the better coaches in the state of Maryland, he always has his team primed for a bounce back after a loss. Just talked about Gonzaga's loss to St. Ignatius Prep. I believe this time last year, Bullis was on a roll to start their season, and then they played Gonzaga, and Gonzaga was able to snag them. And that ended up being one of Bullis's few losses that season. So I'm looking at this game on Friday as a very intriguing one.
For me, I'm looking forward to the annual trip that Culver Academy makes to the Mid-Atlantic, which is coming out this next week. They have games against the Haverford School, against Gonzaga, which is an interesting one. That's a nice Tuesday afternoon game if you're in the Mid-Atlantic area. I love jumping on the MARC train and headed down to Gonzaga. It's literally blocks away from the station there and checking out a high school game. And then they have a big one next Wednesday. The 29th is Wednesday against McDonough. That's a clash of two top 10 teams. And that one I know is going to be broadcast via MIALacrosse.com and the guys at Corrigan. Booker is out there again doing his thing.
Nice to Nifty.
Yep. So that one will be able to be seen by a national audience. I encourage everybody who likes the prep game to tune in and watch. And I think they end up with a final contest against St. Paul's. Culver and Coach John Posner always trying to vie for those top 10 spots, top 5 spots in the rankings, and really doing a good job developing talent that plays at the next level. So looking forward to their annual trip to the Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, Culver McDonough last year, it was a game that I actually went to, and I believe it went to overtime. Definitely one of the more memorable games in the regular season I saw that entire year. So you're right, definitely one to be excited for. All right, everybody, thank you for listening in again to the IL Preps podcast. Our inaugural podcast was very successful, so I was very pleased to see the numbers on that one. If you like the podcast, please tell a friend, please subscribe, and also please give us feedback either via Twitter or email. We appreciate the listen.
Yeah, if you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at Jeff_Shannon on there. But I would suggest that everybody follow at IL Preps. That's where you're going to find the latest news and notes during the high school prep season. So take care, everybody.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.